Ryland Walker Knight. Hello, how are you? This is Vinyl Is Podcast, the second episode, and I'm joined by some other people.
Thanks, Ryland.
Thank you, Ryland.
That was Brian Darr, the first guy who they just introduced yourselves.
Oh, okay, Brian Darr. I live in San Francisco and have a blog, Hell on Frisco Bay.
And Mark Haslam, who ruined podcast one.
No. But yeah, so we're joined by Brian because on his blog he usually does like a seasonal roundup of links to a lot of stuff on the rep calendar. And so this episode we're going to be talking about the rep calendar in the Bay Area, what's coming up. I live in Berkeley, so I'm pretty close to the PFA, and I go there a fair amount. They're a good bunch. They program a lot of cool stuff. And I've already started going to the Zsa Zsanka films. There's a whole bunch of stuff we can talk about, but at first we're going to talk about this. Really, really cool mainland Chinese director I'm just learning about. I haven't seen anything except for the first few things they've programmed. Last Friday on the 12th, they showed Still Life and Dong. And then on Thursday, they showed his debut movie, Zhao Wu. Last night, I missed his Zhao Shan Going Home, his thesis film from the Beijing Film Academy. But I think Brian has seen some.
I've seen a few, yeah. I've seen Still Life and Dong and The World and Unknown Pleasures. I guess... we talk about John a little bit?
Yeah, well, why don't we? I mean, something that I...
Who is he?
He's from Fengyang, Shaanxi province.
And he seems to be, to me, just as an outsider, seems like the mainland Chinese director over the past, say, 10 years or so, who has gotten the most international film festival attention and awards and just critical attention,
right,
in the West anyway. I'm not sure about his reputation in China.
I'm pretty ignorant of that as well. I mean, used to names like Hu Xiaoshen, but he's so what stood out to me is that he is from the mainland, and it's a much different argument than Hu Xiaoshen's Taiwan based films.
Right. Or the Hong Kong center of, say, Johnny To or Wong Kar Wai.
Right. Like, Still Life takes place in the Three Gorges Dam area. It's using Bressonian style, no professional actors, a lot of, like, documentary aspects of it. That's something that I really respond to these days.
I mean, I think all of his films that I've seen have some kind of an interplay between documentary and fictional elements, whether it's very integrated into every moment in the film, or whether it's kind of like sometimes he uses what would the word be? Like Dong is kind of segmented.
Right. The thing that stuck out to me about that film was it's very interested in the reversal of things. Like, it is, like, bifurcated.
That's the word I want.
It's set up, and there's two different tracks, I guess, you could talk about in Still Life, with the man searching for a wife, and the woman searching for a husband. It seems to be, I mean, you could draw a parallel to the Thai director, Pichit Pong, we're set the cool. You could tie a link to Pedro Costa and his project in a way, because I guess Zsa's starting to use digital in his new films?
Well, I'm under the impression that he's been using it for quite a while. I don't know if it goes, how far back it goes, but I believe that he shot Unknown Pleasures, which is the first film I saw of his, digitally. Now, I know it was distributed and 35 millimeter.
I wasn't. I'm not really sure what those are because they just list the in the PFA calendar. They just list what medium they're going to be
Right.
showing it on. And I think I read somewhere that even still life was digital, but it has a very supple feel to it, so it didn't look like. I mean, Costa uses like a low grade kind of thing, and it's a
Right.
much different aesthetic, but.
Yeah, and Unknown Pleasures has these really rich colors to it that don't look like the quintessential ugly digital look. But the, my impression is that that film, at least, was something that was not sanctioned by the Chinese government, and so that he needed to be in there and with a small camera crew filming things that in this industrial town of Datong. That would not necessarily have passed approval by governmental film bodies.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why he's moved towards digital. If he ever did film, I'm not sure what platform and the one you saw last night or the other night.
Yeah, I think that was 16 millimeter.
16 millimeter film.
Yeah, and it's a really rough film. It's very restless. I'm gonna try and write something about it, so I'm gonna keep that to myself for now. And maybe we should move on to something else in the calendar. What else jumps out to you, Mark? We haven't heard from you.
The thing I'm most looking forward to at the PFA is probably the Envisioning Russia series.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
A century of filmmaking, and there's a, I mean, there's just it just the whole thing looks amazing, but I mean, probably the standout for me would be Tarkovsky's The Mirror, which I haven't seen on the big screen, and just any chance to see a Tarkovsky on a big screen is sort of incredible. But I mean, they're beginning with the Battleship Potemkin, which I think is sort of obviously a nice launching point for not only for Russian cinema but for cinema in general, and so that should be fun, but it all looks good.
Yeah, they're doing two other silent films. One is Jewish Luck, which I've never seen and haven't heard too much about, and then Bed and Sofa, which is another kind of not quite as seminal as Battleship Potemkin, but it's definitely one of those classics that is supposed to be important, but in a fun way. I believe it's a comedy.
Okay,
Maybe
cool.
not, I'm not sure.
The Mirror is a personal favorite of mine, so I'm pretty excited about that, to see it on film in a theater that it prizes presentation. I've written about it before, so I probably won't write about it again, but I might link to what I did write. Also, the Cranes Are Flying is great, and it'll be cool to see all those weird angles, big and loud. So,
Yeah, and the other film by the same director, Letter Never Sent, which is
right.
supposed to be something,
Yeah, I will definitely try to make that. I mean, they're on a double bill on Saturday, October 18th, and if I can, I'll do both.
it's worth going to.
And they've got everything from the fantasy by Pushko, I don't know how to pronounce his name, to like recent Alexander Sokurov films. So it really covers the whole time and
And they have
range
this
of.
Larissa Shepitko film, The Ascent, is going to be playing after Potemkin. Was that part of the recent Eclipse
I believe
release?
that one is on the new Eclipse DVD series, but I don't think any of her films have shown in a few years in the Bay Area, so it'll be good to see if there's a new print or something.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, what else stands out to you, Brian?
Well, already, I mean, we're already almost halfway through the calendar,
Yeah.
and they're still finishing up the tail end of the Manuel de Oliveira films.
Great.
I've seen a few of them, and I hope to catch a few more. I know that next Wednesday is his more recent Belle Toujours, which is going to play on a double bill of the film that it's allegedly a sequel to, Belle de Jour by Buñuel, of course. I've never seen that on the big screen. I've never seen Belle Toujours because it's only played in San Rafael in the Bay Area before. So I'd hope to go to that. Ideally, I'll go to Abraham's Valley, which is probably the film that he's best known for among the cinephile community. It's, that's playing Sunday, September 28th, and is supposed to be important and good.
Yeah, I saw some of them on the last calendar, and I dug them. I was at the very tail end of my undergraduate degree, so my energy level wasn't that great.
Right.
But they were cool. I don't have much to say because I was so tired. But the interest in theatricality is really cool in what he's doing. And he uses non-professionals in an interesting way as well, blended with that theatricality.
A couple other ones that are that have already started is that they're doing early films of David Lean, which that's a nice compliment to the Castro is going to be doing bigger epics of the later David Lean films. It's all in celebration of his 100th.
I think there's David Lean stuff in New York right now, too, right?
Probably, yeah. Also, the Raphael had a David Lean series earlier this year.
Yeah.
So everyone's celebrating 100 years of David Lean, I guess, in their own ways.
Yeah. I like his Dickens adaptations a lot, and Brief Encounter played last night. I didn't go, but I would like to see that on a screen sometime.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great looking. Tonight they're showing Blythe's Spirit, which is, I think he worked with Noel Coward on. And we might be able to scoot over there and see that once we're done here.
Maybe. And they've also started a Godard series. It's not a complete, but it's a bunch of his films from the 60s, including some that haven't shown often recently, like Alphaville.
Yeah, they showed two or three things I know about her at the Castro last spring, I think.
Yeah.
Have you gone to any of the Godard movies?
I saw Vivo Sa Vie,
which
was a lot of fun. I mean, yeah. that's just a sort of a really fun film in general.
I love that movie. I really wanted to go, but my friend was in town. sticking with the French, they're going to have a big Eustache series. I guess that's traveling. It was in Toronto from James Quant, and it's been around in
that
New York.
Fun.
And, yeah, maybe fun. I don't know. Sounds scary. They showed Mother and the Whore last spring, mm-hmm. I think.
They did. They sold out the theater because Mick LaSalle actually recommended it on his podcast. And
we can't compete with that. They're showing it again. I missed it. I didn't try to go see it because I was afraid of its length and subject matter.
Yeah, I saw it when San Francisco's MoMA showed it last December, and it'd been on my list to see for a long time.
Did it live up to the rep?
Yeah, I think it did. I haven't read much specifically about Eustache, just knowing that he's an important figure who didn't make that many films, and the chance to see any of them is kind of special, and this many of them is going to be quite unusual.
The title of the series too, I think, is interesting. No Wave, because I actually think there was a semi-cinematic movement in the 80s called the No Wave cinema, like the early 80s, that was associated with the music, the No Wave music scene. But so I'm wondering if maybe there's any sort of, it was all like very experimental. I don't know. I mean, it does, I think, relate pretty well to that sort of music. So see this linking, but.
The Mother and the Whore is a four-hour movie. I don't think there's an intermission, right?
I don't remember one I saw it.
I mean, it's all about duration, right?
Yeah.
Things repeating themselves and cycles of.
Yeah, you get exasperated with the characters because it continues.
Right, right. It's not like pure delight like Out One. I think Out One's pure delight, but. They're also showing his other feature, the beautiful, where is it? Aren't they showing his?
My Little Loves?
My Little Loves, yeah. They're showing that and a whole bunch of his shorts. And I think he is very much more experimental. Like he takes up the more Godardian aspects of the New Wave, I guess. Experimenting with narrative and its failures or whatever. but like I said, I haven't seen anything, so...
I feel like given the quote here that they have of his, you have to record things whether they're pretty or not, they're important. I think you, Ryland, as a proclaimed materialist would...
Yeah.
Sort of like that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I'm pretty excited, and hopefully I can write some things about that as it progresses. And that's in October. I got really scared the other day because I'm going to this Cut Copy concert on the 5th, and I was really scared that the Mother and the Whore and Cut Copy were going to be on the same day, but they aren't, so San Francisco, you can get depressed on Saturday and then go dance your butt off on Sunday, so do that. Although I think Cut Coffee's sold out, so maybe not.
I think I reveal myself as an oldster here, and when I say I don't even know what that is.
They're an Australian band. They're really smart. They're into 80s stuff. They make kind of dance music like New Order. You know, that's a pretty common touchstone, I think, for them.
Or maybe even like the song we included last week. Not quite like that.
But. Yeah, maybe not quite as goofy as that one. They got a little more going on, I think, musically, and I think they're a little more thoughtful. They're kind of like a punk band who decided they wanted to make dance music, and I really like that. So, but yeah, there's more to the calendar, and we could talk about that too.
I was trying to think of a way to segue that to Milos Forman, even though it's finished. They showed Audition and Black Peter and Taking Off and several other of his early films, which involve youth music, rock and roll music. So it was a great series. I don't think he's an incredibly important auteur, but I don't think he made any bad films, at least in the first half of his career. So it's definitely worth it. Seeing Milos Forman films, at least up to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is where they ended this series.
That's where they ended the series. I thought you were going to say that's where he ended his...
Actually, I like some of his films since then, too. But
like Amadeus, are you into that?
I haven't seen it in years, honestly.
Yeah, I haven't either. I mean, I remember liking it a lot.
Yeah.
Are you Milos?
I've always liked Loves of a Blonde. I mean, that's the only one I sort of have revisited, and
right.
I don't know, the other ones I always remember enjoying, but it was never something that I was like compelled to watch over and over.
Have you seen Taking Off?
I haven't.
That was worth
it.
Okay. Was
terrific. I'm largely ignorant of him pre Cuckoo's Nest, so I missed out, I guess.
You missed out.
But yeah, in connection with the Zha Zhangke, there's this series at the Berkeley Art Museum about Chinese art, which also links to another series in the calendar focused on Ning Ying. And that sounds pretty cool. I think she's going to be in residence as well.
And I've heard of this filmmaker. I've heard of her, but I don't think I've ever seen any of her films available for screening since I've been paying attention,
right,
or in any video store that I've looked or whatever. So I think it'll be a new experience for me and
probably
all of us.
That series is called I Love Beijing. And so the tagline quote they've got is that Ning Ying knows Beijing the way Martin Scorsese knows New York. So that should be cool. I don't know Beijing at all. So and I don't think the Olympics gave me a fair picture of it. So I'm into a different angle.
You know, this byline they put on the movie Perpetual Motion that's playing on the 26th of October is pegged by Western critics as a Chinese Sex in the City. I'm really hoping that's inaccurate.
yeah.
I mean, given Western critics, I think that's
also like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. But that's bizarre. But speaking of the bizarre, tidy. There's the Alternative Vision series, as usual. And Brian knows more about the avant-garde than I do. It's something I would like to learn more about, and I'm I hope to this fall.
Well, I'm still learning quite a bit myself. I don't claim to be an expert here, but I always am very impressed by the Tuesday night programs that the PFA brings. Basically, each, if you look at it as like a semester's worth of, you know, indoctrination into avant-garde cinema. It can work that way if you continue to go over the semester.
I'm definitely hoping. I mean, the big one that everybody's probably highlighting is the new James Benning film that just showed at the Toronto Film Festival, and a lot of people like Girish, Shambu, and Darren Hughes have already gushed about. You can go to their blogs and read their awesome stuff. But there's other cool stuff that I'm sure I don't know about. What jumps out, Brian?
Well, it looks like the Materialist Cinema looks like a good set on October 7th with Paul Schuritz, T-O-U-C-H-I-N-G, is supposed to be something really important and interesting. Owen Land is going to have a film being shown. So that takes care of one sort of a thread of avant-garde cinema.
Is that picture, are we going to see that's still in the calendar? We're looking at the calendar as we're talking.
That's one of the Robert Beavers films.
Oh, okay.
That's going to be Tuesday, October 28th.
Oh, yeah, Picture of Colored Light. I think that played at New York Film Festival last year.
Possibly, yeah.
I don't know for sure.
This coming Tuesday, it's Robert Breer Films. He's an animator who's very... what the word is, but
I don't know either.
Kind of a homegrown aesthetic.
Okay.
And I guess the collage animations, that would have been a good one to see. That was this last Tuesday. They had Janie Geyser, Lewis Klar, and Eric Sachs. But yeah, again, I'm also with you in being particularly excited about RR, which is the Bay Area premiere of this new James Benning film. First saw James Benning films at the PFA a few years ago when they showed 10 Skies and 13 Lakes.
Right.
And
I didn't see either of those. I probably was doing something else and just, I don't know. For all my love of cinema, I try to jump out in the world some, even though I mostly think movies. Have you seen any James Benning?
I haven't seen any.
Are you into the avant-garde?
I mean, I can be. I mean, I enjoy them when I see them. I'm not terribly active.
Yeah.
No, I wish I would, though. It's just, I don't know. It's hard to find them in the first place.
I think we were talking about this earlier today, Brian and I, about how important it is to see them on film, because like the series is called one of the. You just mentioned the materialist cinema.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense that you would want to see that in the material and the medium it's made on and for.
I don't see an Owen Land DVD set coming anytime soon.
Yeah, probably not. So it's something cool to check out. I'm going to try to. But it'll be, I mean, everything, you know, is a good lesson, so... But I think we've exhausted Berkeley, so maybe we should talk about San Francisco, because that's where you live, and you'll probably be going to a lot over there, too.
Well, hopefully.
Or some.
Yeah, the Castro Theater, of course, has got its calendar up. They're doing a focus on Conrad Hall, the cinematographer. They're going to do Nino Rota, the composer. And they're also doing, as I said, the David Lean films. This weekend they're doing Tim Burton.
Oh.
And next weekend, oh no, 2 weekends from now is one I'm probably most excited about on the whole calendar. I've been waiting to see it on the big screen. Kagamusha from Akira Kurosawa. It just didn't seem like something to put in my Netflix queue. big samurai epic from 1979 that
yeah, I've never seen it.
yeah, I've never seen it, so I've just been waiting for an opportunity like this to see it on a huge screen, October 4th and 5th.
So you can either do Mother and the Whore,
right?
Or you can do
Kagamusha.
Kagamusha.
Yeah.
Divergent paths.
Right.
Yeah, maybe you want to talk about how you organize your cinephilia around seeing films in theaters as much as possible, as opposed to at
yeah,
home.
I do see a lot more on the big screen. I tend to wait for something, hope that it'll come to a theater, although depending on what it is, I'm starting to become less faithful that it will.
Mm-hmm.
And then just when it's on the screen, I'll see it then, and then saving DVDs for a rewatch.
Right.
That's my
yeah,
theoretical hope. Of course, sometimes I can't resist some incredible film that just came out on DVD, and I just didn't expect it was gonna show on the big screen anytime soon, and I'll break down. That probably happens more often than I'd like to admit, but
that's cool. I mean, I would like to do that more and more, and I think I can make that happen. But at the same time, Netflix is a good tool.
Right.
I don't know. Do you find you want to watch more movies in theaters, Mark? Or, like, how does that relationship work for you? I know you have, like, a million jobs and all the time busy, but...
No, I think theater's definitely preferable for me. I don't know, there's something about sitting down and sort of being forced through... I mean, not really being forced, but... feeling compelled to sit through the entire film. Whenever I watch a film at home, it's so easy to get distracted. I'm getting up and going to the kitchen, or you know,
yeah.
pausing it and stuff. And I don't know. I think film really wants to be. I mean, needs to be continuous more so than like a novel or something.
Right.
I really like being with the audience as well. I
yeah.
think the audience reactions to certain films can be as entertaining as the film itself sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, imagine this Bette Davis centennial that they're doing is probably going to be at the Castro Theater. It'll be probably something to stay away from, actually, if you're into the purity of just the medium of film itself. But if you're interested in experiencing how an audience is reacting to the film, it's definitely going to be an interesting Wednesday.
I mean, I'm a, you know, kind of spoil sport in that respect. I wrote about it in my Silent Fest thing about, and something we talked about last week, about how I get annoyed at certain laughter. I haven't gotten to the point where I can think about it. I just sort of, I don't know. But I mean, I'll try and work on that, maybe. I mean, to get, you know, diverge a little bit more, Brian and I happen to be going to the same screening of Burn After Reading today.
Right, that's true.
We sat on the opposite side of the theater from one another. I just found a seat I liked, and I just sat there. So I didn't...
Yeah, it was kind of coincidental we were going to this screening.
Yeah, I mean, out of the blue, I saw that it was playing, and I was like, I'm just going to run up there and see it. I want to laugh. And I did. I liked the movie. I think it's getting a weird reception that... It'd probably be talked about.
Did you notice the audience laughing in places where you weren't, and vice versa?
Yeah.
Did that affect you? Did that bother
no,
you?
No, I mean, I was in the right mood for just to be there, mostly just to enjoy myself. So I was paying attention to how this group next to me was. The thing that annoyed me was their reaction to the W trailer. That really annoyed me. Like, they hadn't heard of it, I guess, and they also were like, oh my god, and I don't know. It's actually a really effective trailer, I think. Oliver Stone is a weirdo, and I don't like what he's doing with the release of this movie, but it looks pretty interesting. I don't know if you share that sentiment at all, but...
it was my first time seeing the trailer, too.
Yeah.
I thought the main thing I was noticing is that they put it right next to the Milk trailer,
right.
which I thought was a juxtaposition that might have been intentional to
yeah.
link Bush with Dan White.
Yeah, because Josh Brolin plays both W and Dan White, which is yeah, I thought of that too, and it seems very plausible given
Given it's
that
Berkeley.
we saw it at the California in Berkeley. But yeah, we've gone astray from the calendar talk. Not that that's bad. I just maybe we could talk about Milk is coming out this fall.
That's
I
right.
Think
it's playing at the Castro. It's gonna.
Is it gonna have its premiere there?
I think it's gonna be the national premiere at November 26th.
Awesome.
Just in time for Thanksgiving. Blah, blah, blah.
No, I was really taken with that trailer. I think it's gonna be good. I like what he's been doing with his movies a lot recently. I was asked to contribute. I don't know if I was asked, but I contributed to that reverse shot issue about him, and I wrote about. I kind of got the last bit of it, so I had to write about Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, which isn't the most exciting movie to think about and spend a month writing on, but it also made me rewatch some of the other ones, and I just had a little Van Zandt while, and I rewatched Last Days probably too many times because I really like that movie, which probably ties back into the talk about avant-garde and interest in certain formal things that I'm into. I don't know. Do you like Gus Van Sant, Mark?
I have mixed feelings about it. I don't know. Something's put me off to him a little bit. There was one quote by Roger Ebert that I liked that was like, even when Van Sant fails, at least he's doing things that other filmmakers like in the system aren't doing, or he's at least like trying things. I mean, for example, I didn't really agree with that in the remake of Psycho, but I don't think that should have been done or needed to be done. But
see, that's my favorite Van Sant film.
Is it?
I just dropped them.
No, I haven't seen it. I didn't watch that one. I think Michael Koreski's essay on it is actually really cool. If you go back and read it. But yeah, maybe you guys should talk about what do you think is productive?
I haven't seen it in a while.
Well, an immediate, like, what do you think is productive about that project?
Just, I think, it's something different than anything else that had been made. A remake that was that faithful, that it almost compels you to think about the nature of remakes as you're watching it.
I mean, I agree with that. I mean, on a conceptual level, I think that was... I mean, but the same thing. I thought that was way more interesting when Haneke remade Funny Games. Hmm. But again, I loved the original Funny Games, but I didn't like the remake.
Right.
And there was some. I think it's something about well, to talk about Funny Games real quick. There was something about the fact that it was American or Hollywood actors that made that sort of estrangement from the original German actors who I'd never. I mean, I'd seen the father before in previous Haneke films, but
right.
There was something about that sort of distance from them that made it so much more real and terrifying. And I feel that same way maybe towards Psycho, even though it's, I mean, it has Hollywood actors, there's something, again, too, there's something really small about Psycho. I mean, that was a film that he changed his...
The original?
Yeah, the original. He changed his cinematographer to a television cinematographer for that one film Hitchcock did.
Right.
And... I mean, I don't think that's a film that necessarily gains much more. I think that's one of the things that it doesn't, visually, it doesn't gain much more when you see it on a big screen. I mean, it gains a lot more with each following, you know, like each viewing, but I don't know. There was just, there was nothing. I mean, I think conceptually, like, it's an interesting idea to think of film as something that's constantly repeating. And I think that's something that Haneke explores a lot and why I liked the idea of remaking it for America, but I don't know. Neither of them worked for me. There was I don't know. Re-experiencing them in that way that was really familiar. Just
also exposing them to new audiences that weren't going to experience the first one for whatever reason. Maybe it's their own small-minded prejudices. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Psycho, it's bringing great pleasure to people who were not gonna get that pleasure through watching a black and white movie because they would refuse to see a movie of that vintage. But I saw it in the theater. People clearly had not seen the original and did not expect some of the things that were happening.
That's
and they
so
were just
weird.
Loving it, you know?
It's such a weird thought to me.
And,
but I mean, it makes sense given the Hitchcock.
Whereas for Funny Games... Oh, you're saying...
No, continue.
Yeah, well, for Funny Games, you know, it's really... it's such an unpleasant experience to be in that audience that it's more like spreading a disease than spreading pleasure, you know?
Yeah, I'm still ignorant of the either version of funny games. Okay. I am afraid, like I keep talking, I'm afraid of things. I don't know if I want that in me for the rest of my life, you know? But, well, I'll probably watch it and talk to Mark about that at some point. maybe have a better argument than just like, no, I don't want it. but, yeah, cool. that somehow, oh yeah, Gus Van Sant, and Psycho, and...
Milk. So
and
I hadn't seen the trailer before either today. Yeah. And I guess I don't know too much about the story. I feel embarrassed to say that. You know, I've only seen the documentary Epstein, Life and Times of Harvey Milk.
Right.
But basically, like, even though I'm a little older than you guys, the assassination of Milk and Moscone was like first thing I really remember when I was a little kid, the first political act that like
right.
I remember happening. I don't know if it was a big deal in San Francisco.
I don't remember.
I think you weren't alive.
I don't think I was. but yeah, no, the trailer is smart. Also great looking. All those guys look really good. I mean, you had to expect that in a way. It's another role I'm sure that'll make James Franco even bigger than he's. I mean, he was the reason to see that silly stoner movie. He was
well, not just him, but the fact that it was directed by
David Gordon Green.
I think he's one of America's more interesting young directors.
He is. I just don't know if that movie was a success beyond James. I mean, he did some interesting things, you know, as a filmmaker that some of the other Apatow brand things don't do, but the real joy for me with that movie was James Franco, like, being so sweet and adorable and, like, loving. You know, it was great. But it's the whole cast looks really good. I mean, beyond not just looking like they are all handsome men, but they all look like they are inhabiting the roles.
Yeah.
Blah, exactly. Blah, 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 blah.
Out of curiosity, what sort of formal continuity? Because I mean, this is a film that seems much bigger and much different than his probably, like, last four films or so.
Yeah, it looks like there's some archival footage thrown in.
Or maybe it's just reproductions of that, like, recreating.
Oh.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a trailer, so
right.
It's hard
it's
to
quick.
Gauge. But
it's probably online too. We should
yeah.
probably be watching it now before we start talking about it.
Yeah, I think the theme already on Vinyl is Podcast is that we don't prepare. we are winging it hard. But
and that's why we're at 40 minutes.
Oh, wow. Awesome. I don't know if anybody's still listening. but yeah, is there anything else just quickly that you think you want to look at in the future?
To kind of tie everything together, the day before, or the week before Milk opens, is going to be a film that I've only seen on video and have been wanting to see on the big screen for years and years. And it's Max Ophuls' Lola Montez, which is going to show at the Castro from November 19th to 25th on a brand new 35mm print. And I'm really excited about that.
They showed that at Telluride. Actually, Mike Lee was supposed to come talk to the student symposium, and he ducked in to watch Lola Montez instead. They got really mad at him, and I thought that was kind of square, because, you know, like, we're at a movie festival, whatever. And he came to talk just the next day, so it's cool. But I saw a version of it at the PFA last...
Yeah, they did a series.
Yeah.
I think at the end of...
Was it a year ago?
No, I think it was a couple months ago. I think it was towards the tail end of spring.
I know I saw it with my friend Willie. I think it was winter. It was winter time.
It was longer.
But I don't know if it was... It was some weird version. Like, they had cobbled together, and it was a little too long or something. So I think this version will be different than that one. So and it'll be at the Castro, which, you know, the PFA is great, but it's not many things are like the Castro. And, yeah, it's a gorgeous movie. It's,
oh, yeah, Awful is incredible.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to... catching up with the third one in the three that Criterion just released. I haven't seen that one. I don't.
Plaisir?
No, no.
Is the earring? Is it the Earrings of Madame De?
Yeah. It's the Plaisir. That's what it is. Yeah. I've seen La Ronde and Earrings. Earrings De, I guess, is just the title. But yeah. So Lola Montez, right before Milk. That's a weird sentence. That sort of wraps up that calendar, right? Until whatever the next time they put out a calendar.
Yeah, that's going to be until November, basically.
And I see you also have the Mill Valley Film
Festival. I just want to quickly mention a couple of things from the Mill Valley Film Festival. Harriet Anderson is going to be in town for a screening of Through a Glass Darkly. It's going to be October 10th. I've never seen Through a Glass Darkly. It's one that I've been putting off for a chance to see on the big screen. I think this is my chance.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty great. I mean, there's a weird reaction to Bergman these days. I mean, I'm kind of part of it. I learned a lot by getting obsessed with him for a while. I think he has some things to teach you, especially when you're... I don't know. I don't want to badmouth him. Because he was so important to me. I mean, I feel like I'm bad-mouthing myself. But, I mean, I still love Fanny and Alexander a lot. There's a lot of magic, like, to that movie beyond the magicians. I don't know, are you a Bergman fan, Mark?
I am.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like for anyone who loves cinema, it's hard not to have had a Bergman phase. There's just something... I think as difficult as films are, there's also something just compulsively watchable and digestible about them. Not necessarily digestible, but consumable.
Sure.
Well, there's also going to be Mishima, Life in Four Chapters, is going to have its the U.S. premiere of a brand new 35mm print, which is going to be as part of Paul Schrader tribute. They're also going to show his new film, Adam Resurrected, which I guess was at Telluride.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
I saw Jeff Goldblum on the street, but I didn't see the movie. he had a cool hat.
They're probably showing a lot of Telluride things. I know they're showing Slumdog Millionaire. Yeah, they're showing Happy Go Lucky,
which I really dug. It's gotten a weird reaction, too, like at least from two guys I read who I like a lot. But, I mean, they think it's just too schematic, and I don't know if need to talk about it that way at all. I was also in a really great mood, so that helped a lot. Yeah. But anyways,
it's a good companion piece to Naked, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like the inverse.
Yeah.
There's a character in Happy Go Lucky that basically is David Thewlis, and Naked. Right. The way they described Naked, Linda Williams and oh my God, I feel like such a jerk. I'm blanking on his name, and he was really awesome. Oh Lord, he's a film critic for NPR, and he lives in Denver, and he teaches in Denver. I feel like a jerk. I'm sorry. I want to say Harvey, but that's so wrong.
You can always spice it in somehow.
Oh right, yeah. Good reminder. but yeah, they described Naked as if there was a movie about Eddie Marsan's character, who's this. Teaching, driving instructor. my mouth is dying.
Well, maybe that's a signal.
Probably. Unless there's like something you feel you need to give another shout out to at the Mill Valley.
I feel like there probably is, but it's not.
Yeah, I haven't digested
that. Oh, Wendy and Lucy is.
Oh,
which
right.
I really am excited.
Yeah,
about.
I still need to see Old Joy. Did you see it, Mark?
I didn't.
Yeah, it's something after a recommendation from Girish, actually, in the comments thread at his blog, I bumped it up in my queue on Netflix. So, I mean, I like Will Oldham. I went through a Will Oldham phase, and it's cool that he's an actor, too. He was in that Kaveh Zahidi thing. That was pretty funny. But, yeah, lots of cool stuff to see. We hope you could track some of it throughout this rambling thing. And thank you for making it all the way to 44 minutes. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
See ya. Go live in the world.
Thank you.